I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Than the one and only Wrestling Messiah. This is episode 94, and on today's episode, finally, the CM Jew has come back to review NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4 and WWE's 2008 SummerSlam. So just sit back and bask in my glory as we start today's review. So, yes, welcome back, everyone. I should have done this more than over a week ago, but life gets in the way, and sometimes that life involves your own personal disabilities like autism. But, you know, we're not here to talk about my inability to keep a schedule. No. I mean, if you look at it this way, right now I'm on vacation from Riftdown, so I guess you can call me a part-time Jew. And though if you've listened to Riftdown, you know that I do this better part-time than anybody can do this full-time. So, I just want to make sure that I get the absolute best quality for you, my listeners. So, I want to do this more than a week ago, but like I said, life got in the way. So, that being said, I think it'd be interesting to look at my views before we get into the reviews proper, because I got a lot to say about everything. And it's mostly positive. We'll see if any negativity comes. You know, I can sit here and say I don't like this or this, but, you know, I don't know in the heat of the moment if I'll be able to say that. But that's here nor there. So I just wanted to go over, for the most part, before I get into reviews, what I've thought of WWE coming out of it. First and foremost, the entire week that was the SummerSlam week, or post-SummerSlam week, coming out of NXT Brooklyn 4 and coming out of SummerSlam, I thought was absolutely excellent. Raw was great on establishing the new status quo going forward. Ultimately, you know, with Kurt Angle going on vacation, aka he's getting ready to wrestle a match at some point. But also establishing Roman Reigns as a champion, a fighting champion. I mean, that match with Finn Balor, one of the best matches of Raw all year. That was great. Dean Ambrose coming back. the reestablishment of the Shield as them all having each other's back as they all go for individual championships as well, providing sort of a roadblock for Braun Strowman, and even leading to this past Monday Night's Raw, which, again, not as good as last week's, but still, I thought, did a really good job moving storylines forward. Just didn't have a lot to it for whatever reason, which is why a lot of people do get frustrated with Raw, and I certainly understand that. It's why the mid-year review I did with Matt and Jay, we all agreed that Raw was the worst show, and it's not so much that they don't do bad things, that they don't give you enough, and thus, at 3 hours long, it's a long thing to be doing every Monday night. So, but still, I thought they did a good enough job moving stories forward, which is certainly the most important thing of that. But you know, you also had SmackDown, the storylines on SmackDown, Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton, and them ultimately coming to head in a Hell in a Cell match at Hell in a Cell. Of course, we've established that Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns will face off in Hell in a Cell. I've loved what they've done with the Daniel Bryan storyline. That's going to be interesting. The tag team championship match between the Bludgeon Brothers and New Day, with New Day becoming a five-time WWE tag team champion, was really great. That match was great. The match on NXT between Pete Dunne and Zach Gibson, amazing. So NXT is firing and all leading up to their next takeover, which is down the line, which is going to be War Games, with the rumor as it is that it's going to be Ricochet and War Raiders versus the Undisputed Era versus Pete Dunne and Mustache Mountain. Whew! You know, as I've said with takeovers, I'm not going to put it above them to surpass last year's War Games match. And let's be honest, last year's War Games match was absolutely amazing. I'm probably going to watch it later tonight just to start preparing. But like, yeah, that's a tall mountain to climb. But if anybody's going to do it, these nine men can do it. Let's just put it that way. So, but again, going back to SmackDown, that honestly, I would love it if WWE would make it that there's four Hell in a Cell matches. You know, you've got Becky and Charlotte. That program is absolutely nuclear right now. And I love the way WWE's portraying that. And we'll get more into this when we cover SummerSlam as well, of, you know, after it, despite all the criticism people have had about, you know, Becky turning heel and Charlotte being face in this, you know, and her winning the championship, I thought they've done a great job of portraying, you know, both wrestlers having a great point and, you know, that creating great conflicts. So no matter who you want to cheer for, even if everybody wants to cheer for Becky, you know, there's good points and they're telling a good story. You're allowed to cheer for who you want, because they're not really sitting there saying that she's a bad guy. She's just had enough and she's done playing by the rules. So it's a very confident character in that standpoint. And that, I'd like to see a Hell in a Cell match. And Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, I would like to see a Hell in a Cell match, though. If ultimately it's about them coming to a conclusion at the Super Show, I can understand why they wouldn't make that a Hell in a Cell match. But they need to make it something, because, you know, Joe just keeps upping the ante on, you know, his attacks on AJ's family. And they need to up the ante somehow. So, we'll see where all that leads to. So overall, I think WWE is in a really good place. I mean, and while this week's Raw may have gone down from the high it was last week, I do think that they're telling very interesting stories that I'm very interested in, whether it be what's going on with the Intercontinental title, what its future is going to be, because, of course, this week you had the absolutely amazing the Raw Match of the Year candidate in Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. In fact, right now, it is my best match of the year on Raw. It, absolutely amazing. And what's going to happen with Kevin Owens' storyline? Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman have me very interested. What's going to happen with... I am completely blanking on that. Not Seth Rollins. Dolph Ziggler. And I shouldn't be blanking on names. I really shouldn't, but I am. But Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. What's going to happen with them? I don't know where the women's is going. It just seems like all the women's divisions, with the exception of Becky and Charlotte, are really more focused on the build-up to the women's evolution. So I think we're going to see a lot of that, with regards to whatever match is put on Hell in a Cell. And just we're going to see that build. And while the SmackDown Tag Team division is very strong in getting a lot of things, again, the weakest part of WWE right now is the Raw Tag Team division. And I really want to see them bring that back up. So that's sort of my look where WWE is at right now. I think it's in a very good place. I like the stories for the most part that they're telling. It's not perfect, but it got me interested and got me excited to watch every week. So, with that being said, I think it's time to get into the events that really set WWE into this motion of being in a really good place. And that was the amazing SummerSlam weekend that featured NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4 and the 2018 version of WWE SummerSlam. And with that, let's start off with NXT Brooklyn 4. So, it took place on August 18th, 2018, to an attendance of 14,896 in the Barclays Center of Brooklyn, New York. Sponsored by Mayans MC show that is debuting, I think maybe has already debuted on the FX channel. It's nice to see that Fox merger already paying dividends. Your commentators for the evening are Nigel McGuinness, Percy Watson, and Mauro Ranallo. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into NXT Brooklyn. Welcome back in the... Well, I don't know if you guys heard me talk on Matty J's mid-year review show, which you can find on YouTube by going to RVT Entertainment and finding the WrestleCast episode. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it's the mid-year review, so it's one of the more recent ones. Or several shows that I did before that, where I made mention in regards to NXT Chicago and NXT Brooklyn. Yeah, particularly after NXT Chicago, yeah. As much as Chicago was pretty much almost perfect for me, I do not doubt with one moment that NXT Brooklyn 4 will be able to surpass it. I've long given up on this hold my beer as I top this mentality of this year's NXT TakeOvers. And, yeah, that was pretty much what happened. Oh my freaking God. This event was absolutely amazing right off the bat. And holy shnikey. Almost every match was a 5-star match. Every match had good pacing and time, as we'll get into. But Whoo! But we'll get into it. This is NXT's WrestleMania, and it felt like it, and it was amazing. And I mean, we'll get into SummerSlam's effort in just a bit, but whoo! But let's get into it. As I may mention, Pete Dunne, Zach Gibson, that would be on the Wednesday show. Amazing match, as was Bianca Belair and Deonna Purrazzo. That was a great showcase for both of them, especially with Denano going to be in the Mae Young class, which is starting next week, by the way, and I can't wait for that. But, of course, the first match of the evening was the Undisputed Era of Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong defending their NXT Tag Team Championship against the team of Mustache Mountain of Trent Seven and Tyler Bate. This match will be the second longest match of the night at 18 minutes and 6 seconds. And, oh my god, if this match didn't feel like an epic hour-long war. Because that's what it felt like. A war. And who you talk about a hot match that gets the crowd into the event. Holy shnikey. I'm trying to cut down on the swearing just a little bit. But I think holy shnikey is a better than just saying the word. And I want to say, because these four gentlemen tore the house down. The back and forth. The false finishes. You know, the story for most of the mid part of the match of them working on Tyler Bates' leg and the whole, will Trent Seven throw in the towel? And just how much pain can he go through watching his partner suffer? And just the chemistry these two teams have. All of that went into this match. The tag team maneuvers. That knee drop burning hammer combo. Oh my god. I believe it was on Kyle O'Reilly. I thought they killed him. I'm like, that's it. He's dead. He's dead. He's dead. He's not kicking out. And then he kicked out. And I'm like, that's it, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. It's over. Hey, we're not even halfway through this match. And I'm like, somebody call up. Somebody call everybody up and say, SummerSlam's effed. as my friend Hairball would say. Because, I mean, we're not even halfway through the first match. And just amazing, and the whole build to the finish of that back and forth between the two teams. Tyler Bate battling through injury. The springboard maneuver that he usually does on the ropes in the ring, where he springs, you know, sort of springs off the ropes by putting his head under the top rope and his arms above the last one to spring and then hit the clothesline. He does that on the outside after a tope and a hilo. Oh, and it was a little botchy, but still amazing. And just these four individuals laid into each other. And that finish to where they're building to what you think is Mustache Mountain winning, but Roderick Strong comes in, throws, I think, Tyler Bate out, and then the quick sort of, that quick finishing move where it's, I think Kyle O'Reilly hitting the for rolling kick under and the knee above. Oh, just amazing. And they get that 1-2-3. And still your tag NXT Tag Team Champions, the Undisputed Era. Absolutely great, amazing match. It can be no less than 5 stars. As we said, and I'll say it right here, because we're about to get into the one match that wasn't 5 stars, but pretty much everything else was 5 stars. But absolutely amazing. And when I say, by the way, the next match is not 5 stars, that doesn't mean it's an amazing, because it was amazing. Our next match would be the special attraction, in a way, Velveteen Dream versus EC3. And, you know, just as I have long stopped believing that the NXT takeovers will top the one before, So have I long stopped trying to believe that there is no way Velveteen Dream can top the entrance that he did the TakeOver before. Oh my god. I think it was like African design, but those tights, which were trending worldwide on Twitter, of, and if you haven't seen it yet, he comes out and on his tight, on the back of his tights, instead of having a picture of him and EC3, no. He has the words, "Call me up, Vince," right on his ass. You want to talk about having balls the size of Alpha Centauri? That would be Velveteen Dream. And yet, you know, the match was really good. I mean, there's no way EC3 could top that, but again, he has that great theme song and that energy with him. Again, you sort of have two heels. One thing I like is they didn't completely play EC3 babyface, though they were portraying him as more of the babyface than Velveteen Dream. But these two had a really good match. Ultimately, looking back at it, it didn't have as much energy and as much substance as all the other matches did, but it was still a very solid match. And then, of course, the build, where EC3 and Velveteen were trying to top each other towards the end, was really good. And just showing the wrestling ability as well as Velveteen Dream, really shown throughout this match, just how much he's grown in the past year. And then that finisher of, I believe it was the rolling Death Valley driver on the ring apron. And then the purple Rainmaker from the top rope onto EC3 on the ring apron. Not in the middle of the ring, on the hardest part of the ring. Oh my god. And then getting the 1-2-3. That was, I think, brilliant booking for that finish. Great finish. Really amazing. Outstanding. It's a 4.5 out of 5 stars if you're going by that rating system. This, like, absolutely fantastic match. It kept the energy from the tag match going. Like, they could have failed here and not kept the energy going. They absolutely did. And my god, was that important, because our next match was for the NXT North American Championship, Adam Cole, Bay, defending his title versus the one and only Ricochet. By the way, Velveteen Dream and ET3 went 15 minutes, 3 seconds. And Ricochet and Adam Cole goes 15 minutes, 19 seconds. For the most part, almost every match went more than 15 minutes. And really, the one match that didn't go can probably be rounded up to 15 minutes. You'll see what I'm saying in a second. But, oh my god, Ricochet and Adam Cole had the match of the frickin' night. My god, these two gifted, magnificent gentlemen. Whoo, my god. Their chemistry, absolutely magnificent. Adam Cole, the way he controlled the match was really great. I love the story here. Him being able to keep one step ahead through most of the match, particularly at the start of Ricochet, and never allowing him to get that air game going. And that was sort of the story he told in the match, was Adam Cole doing everything in his power to keep Ricochet grounded, but ultimately Ricochet being able to be the King of Flight takeoff, and that gave him the advantage over Adam Cole. But my god, did Adam Cole do everything to keep Ricochet grounded in that match, including a part where Ricochet goes for a moonsault, and Adam Cole, I've never seen this, super kicks him in midair while he's upside down, and then immediately hits the, I know it's not called the last shot, but what was sort of used as his finisher before he came to WWE, where it sets the brainbuster on the knee. Oh my god. And like, that's it, he killed him, it's over. And just like, there's no way he's kicking out of that, and then Ricochet kicks out of that. And those false finishes towards the end of the match, absolutely amazing. I love how they did the finish to where, again, Ricochet hits a maneuver and puts Cole in the middle ring. Goes up for what is more than likely going to be like a shooting star press. But Adam Cole rolls to the opposite end of the ring onto the apron. He thinks he's safe. Ricochet just looks at the camera, shrugs, and then does a maneuver where he leaps over, runs sort of around the ring. So he runs from his corner towards the corner that's between him and Cole, at, then towards, and rounds that corner towards Adam Cole, leaps over the top rope, catches Adam Cole in a Hurricanrana off the ring apron to the floor. Absolutely amazing, and he did it flawlessly. And he rolls him back in, and then hits the 630 senton. Absolutely amazing match. I mean, the fact that they only, this match was only 15 minutes. Imagine if they had an epic war that went like a half hour. Oh my god. I mean, we are only getting tastes of what these individuals could do. And it's 5 stars, as this match was. It was absolutely amazing. The story was told in the perfect way. It was a damn near perfect match. I can't really think of any any botches whatsoever. Just absolutely amazing. And so was our next match. Kairi Sane challenging the NXT Women's Champion, Shayna Baszler, for the NXT Women's Championship. This is the only match that didn't go over 15 minutes, but it was at 13 minutes, 37 seconds. So I think we can round it up and say it was about 15 minutes. Or at least almost. And my god, this right now is like the best women's match on the planet. I absolutely love how this story was told. The basic story was Kairi Sane comes out hot, firing all cylinders, but ultimately Shayna Baszler takes her down and grounds her. But because she's like this all snub about how good she is and that she can take anybody out with that coulda, feta clutch at any point, she plays with Kairi Sane too much, and that allows her to fire back up. That's classic wrestling storytelling in the ring 101. And come back and just beat Shayna Baszler down. And the aggressiveness that Kairi Sane throws here, it was just absolutely amazing. The several insane elbow drops that she does, the one to the back, the one on the ring apron in a way, or the body splash, the one to the back, and then another one that gets countered with knees up, and then all of that was amazing. And just the whole build to that finish, to where Baszler gets the knees up and then goes to hit Sane in the coulda, feta clutch, but Kairi Sane then rolls through it a la Bret Hart on Roddy Piper, WrestleMania, WrestleMania 8, excuse me. Because a lot of people were making that reference after the show. Like, that was very like that. And getting the 1-2-3 in that way was amazing. The submission ability of Kairi Sane also shown there that, you know, she can also do submissions. And that she's a good ground wrestler as well. That was a great showcase because I think the one criticism I can have of Kairi Sane since she's been in WWE is that they really just like shown her mostly in doing that, in the insane elbow, and everything's built up to that. They showed a lot more of her wrestling arsenal in this match, and I thought that was great for her. And it was just amazing. It was, like I said, best women's match of the year, at least so far. I mean, we do have the Mae Young Classic coming and Women's Evolution, but my god, was it amazing. And just a great finish with that. You know, you think, oh, Shayna Baszler's not going to, because he had the coulda, feta clutch in earlier, and just the build to Kairi Sane breaking that with a ring break was magnificent. But here. She goes locking the Kofi Klutz. Like, oh no, that's gonna be it for Kairi Sane. But then she rolled. You don't even realize for a moment that she rolled through because it happened so quick. And at some point, I'm like, wait. Oh, yes, yes. Like, I visibly jumped out of my seat and was happy. So that was great. And that brings us to the main event. For the NXT Championship, a last man standing match, as the champion, Tommaso Ciampa, the Blackheart, defended against his former best friend and greatest enemy, Johnny Gargano. Now, a couple things here. One, yes, absolutely, this is another 5-star match between them. But it's not their best match. In fact, it's not as good as the past two. But it's still a 5-star match. It's still freaking amazing because, oh my god, the chemistry between these two. And all of the callbacks throughout the match, when like the ripping up the ring apron, and ultimately Ciampa getting it this time, and that, oh my, all the different ways they found to do damage to each other. And all the ways, like, that's it, he's not getting up. And all of the false finishes in this last man standing match, from ultimately Ciampa getting DDT'd on those ring boards, and you think he's not going to do it, but he rolls out of the ring and is managed to stay up. Like, all different, he found up, found the way to stand up. Johnny Gargano gets, like, blown through the barricade with a running knee, and then Ciampa literally buries Johnny Gargano on chairs, on barricade wall. He even threw a couple guys on there. That couldn't stop. Johnny Gargano gets up at like 9.5. The throwing of Ciampa literally, I think, threw Ronaldo. Like, oh my god. They killed him. Everything in this match, like, screamed like these two men want to kill each other. And that is what you want in a last man standing match. It was magnificent. And I know a lot of people don't like the ending because, again, Johnny loses. And Johnny is such a great babyface that, like, you desperately wanted to win, even though logic tells them, like, this is the storyline they need to tell. But this is the storyline you want. But I love how they did the finish to where, again, it's telling the story of Johnny. Yeah, Ciampa is so much in Johnny Gargano's head that he's basically losing to him in every conceivable way, including the fact that he's becoming like Ciampa. And to the point to where he handcuffs Ciampa to the set. And he builds up and he does the running, like, he does the whole bye-bye Ciampa and hits the knee. But not even thinking that there's no way for him to go after he hits the knee, going into the production table, and that leading to him not getting up, though he generally did apparently have an injury and, like, tweaking his knee, but that not allowing him to get up to the count of 10 while Ciampa, because of where he was at, was allowed to once again roll off the stage, and that allowed him to be up, including the fact that he was handcuffed to the ring set allowed him to stand up. And once again, Johnny Gargano's emotions getting the better of him. That storytelling has been absolutely magnificent. And whenever they finally have the blow-off to where whatever championship Johnny Ciampa is holding, and Johnny Gargano beats him and becomes champion, is going to be amazing because of this story that they're continuing to tell. All of the callbacks with the crutches, with super kicks, the super kick on Ciampa through two tables to the exposed concrete. It's just amazing. It was an absolutely amazing match. It was a great way to close the show. At least 5 stars. And like, what more can you say about NXT Brooklyn 4? It's right now the best pay-per-view / event of the year. Forget the fact that SummerSlam's not going to top this. There's no way All In is going to be able to top it, as which is going to be tomorrow, by the way, or by the time this is coming out, tonight. Like, How is anything this year going to top that? There is nothing. Nothing is going to top it except possibly War Games. And I'm sure it is. It's like I said, I am not, I will not be surprised when War Games tops this. But that's the only event I see from any organization that has any hope of topping. And like, I'm thinking of all my friends. I know T-Dub is going to probably say some event that he went to in the Virginia Independent Wrestling. That's great for him. But to anybody with any bit of logic, this, bar none, right now is the best wrestling event of the year. And I don't see how anybody could, with any bit of logic, can say that there's anything better than it. Anybody who says otherwise is not talking logically. They're talking from emotional bias. Which is okay if that's what you are. But at least admit that. I mean, let's go down the regular thing before we finish this. Top three moments. The Burning Hammer knee drop combo by Mustache Mountain on, I believe, Kyle O'Reilly. Absolutely amazing. Velveteen Dream having Call Me Up Vince on his tights. Holy shnikey. But top moment of the night, the super kick to Ricochet mid-moonsault and then the Brainbuster knee drop for a near fall. Oh my god. So many wonderful moments throughout the night. And then as far as favorite matches, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano was, I see it as the third best match of the night. And when that's your third best of the match of the night, you know the event's great. Number two, Undisputed Era versus Mustache Mountain, the opening tag match. Absolutely incredible. And of course, number one, Ricochet versus Adam Cole. This event was amazing. As I said, every match, with the exception of Velveteen Dream and EC3, was a 5-star match. Like, absolutely amazing. And even Velveteen Dream and EC3 was like 4.5 out of 5. Like, it's the worst match of the night, but again, as I continue to say on NXT TakeOver review shows, the worst match at a TakeOver show, more often than not, would be the most amazing main event of any other show. That's how good TakeOver is. The NXT TakeOver Brooklyn has been called NXT's WrestleMania for a reason, and this night showed it. This match, or these matches, and this event was as close to damn near perfection as you can get. And I dare anybody to tell me otherwise. Don't worry, I'll wait as you fail to prove me wrong. So says the glorious one. NXT Brooklyn 4 gets a perfect 5 stars from me. I should say a perfect 5 out of 5. So that is it for NXT Brooklyn 4. But that's not the end of our night. No, no, no. We still got one more event to cover. Yet, it's going to be a long show. So, it's time for the biggest party of the summer as WWE's Raw and SmackDown present from the Barclay Center in Brooklyn, New York, on August 19th, 2018, to an attendance of 16,169, sponsored by Cricket Wireless, MLB Tap Sports Baseball 2018, WWE Elite Collection, and Tap Out. With your color commentators of Nigel McGuinness, Percy Watson, and Vic Joseph, 205 match. On SmackDown, Tom Phillips, Byron Saxton, Michael Cole, and Jonathan Coachman for Raw, and of course, for both SmackDown and Raw, Corey Graves. Let's get into the biggest party of the summer. This is SummerSlam 2019. and 18.
I got the wild ones, high ones, high ones, do or die ones, even shy ones. Up 1, 2, get to the middle and throw it back to me. Nobody do it like you do that for me. Sheesh, don't blow half on the halftime freak. Let's talk Biscayne, shout out South Beach. Do some loose, what's up? I broke the leash. Yeah, 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 you got all 3 eyes on the prize. Right now.
You know, SummerSlam was honestly a very fun time for me this year, because, and it was kind of last minute, but I had some friends come over to watch it with me. So, beyond just my perspective, I also had the perspective of some of my friends, who made a lot of very good points, and very much influenced the way I've seen things here. I mean, let's start off with the pre-show. The only match that I didn't get to watch was Aldrinis y Almas versus Zelina Vega versus Lana and Rusev. And that was because I was out getting food for people as we ordered pizza. I heard it was decent, though, from the guys. I'll get more into these pre-show matches in just a second. But I guess my one criticism of the pre-show is that I thought the matches would happen later, like closer to the start time, thus allowing people to get into the building and fill seats. I hate when they like put it at the beginning of the pre-show. Like the way they did it at WrestleMania was the right way to do it. They had a 2-hour pre-show, they were letting people in that first hour, and then they had all the pre-show matches at the end with the two Rumbles and the Cruiserweight match. And that was the perfect way to do it. And I wish they would have done it here. So I just heard that message. Okay. Cedric Alexander versus Drew Gulak for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. By the way, that tag team match went 7 minutes. This was, for what it was good. I mean, Drew Gulak and Cedric Alexander are absolutely magnificent. Unfortunately, they were only given 10 minutes here, because it was about 10 minutes, 15 seconds. And when you add in what was a botched ending with the roll-up? It could have been better. And it's really sad to say that, because these are two excellent wrestlers, and they have, all the Cruiserweights have been tearing it up on 205 Live. And they just weren't given enough time, I think, to build a cohesive match in this point. Or at least if they were trying to, they didn't get it done. And then you have that botch at the end, which is just really obvious. And really sloppy, and it's just, it hurt. It really hurt. That hurt more than anything else on this pay-per-view. And then you hit the B-team of Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel with their awful entrance theme versus the revival of Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson. And I know some people dig the B-team, and they were fun at first, but I am so over them. And just, this Bo Dallas stumbles into the roll-up by Scott Dawson, thus rolling Curtis Axel into the pin, getting the win by mistake. And it's like, oh, this is why the Raw Tag Team division is the weakest division in the WWE, by far. So, just going on the pre-show, I'm like, oh god, I really hope this isn't a preview of what SummerSlam is going to be. And by god, thank god I was wrong. Getting into, by the way, that tag team match was 6 minutes 15 seconds. But getting into the pay-per-view proper, we start off hot with the WWE Intercontinental Championship as the champion Dolph Ziggler with his friend Drew McIntyre defended against Seth Rollins with Dean Ambrose. Of course, Dean Ambrose being announced on the Raw before SummerSlam. And again, Ziggler and Rollins just tore the house down. By far, best match of the night, or possibly best match of the night. There's one. There's one match that might slightly be better. But we'll get to that later down the card. But they just, again, Ziggler and Roman are just so smooth in the way they flow into maneuvers and the story they were telling, the back and forth contest of these two wrestlers who are just so quick and smooth with their movements. Again, it was great. And I love the fact that it wasn't overbooked with too many interferences from Drew McIntyre. I think that worked into it. So when Drew McIntyre did get involved at the end, he interfered one or two times. That way, when he does interfere at the end, and mind you, this also because he like took out Dean Ambrose. When Dean Ambrose comes, takes his foot and flings him off the apron so he lands right into a dirty deed by him, it felt earned and felt so good. And that also leading to the finish to where Seth Rollins is watching this and he's not paying attention and there's Dolph Ziggler ready with the super kick, but then you had this sort of draw of the super kicks where he turns around and immediately then beat Ziggler to the punch with his own super kick and then that going into the stomp to get the 1-2-3 and become your new WWE Intercontinental Champion. I loved it. It was an absolutely fantastic wrestling match and a great way to get the crowd into the event. I mean, the crowd was completely into it. Our next match would then be for the WWE. That match, by the way, went 22 minutes and would be the third longest match of the night. Times for this event are all over the place, but it coming together, all of it leads to, I thought, a really almost perfectly paced SummerSlam. Like, despite being 4 hours, six if you include the pre-show, for being 2 hours, even though some didn't have matches or whatnot, still, for a four-hour event, like, it was perfectly paced. I never felt tired. I never felt exhausted. Even though I actually was tired because I had a long night before and had very little sleep. So, the next match was for the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championship as the New Day of Big E and Xavier Woods faced off against the Bludgeon Brothers of Harper and Rowan. Now, if you look at this match, adding in the match they would have two nights later on SmackDown, it actually makes a cohesive story that really, really works and I really, really love. That being said, I do understand why people did not like the disqualification, but I did, because I did. I thought it added to the Bludgeon Brothers' story, the fact that they are this dominant team. And you're not just going to easily take titles off of them. You're going to have to, like, really earn it. And, of course, that leading to that match, I think, makes the match work. The match was 9 minutes 45 seconds before the disqualification came in. But, again, it was a great back and forth. The Bludgeon Brothers were just dominant. But, again, the firing up from Big E and New Day coming back, forcing them to get the disqualification. This wasn't, and that's the thing, like, this disqualification didn't feel like a disqualification because they had no way other out of the match, and they just did it so they came to the story. It felt like both New Day forced them to take the disqualification, and more importantly, that they wanted to take the disqualification, because really the Bludgeon Brothers were just there to, like, hurt the New Day. And so it fit both those things, so I thought it worked fine. I really enjoyed it. And thought that storytelling there was great. And by the way, you're hearing me say that a lot for SummerSlam is storytelling, as opposed to wrestling, as I talked about in NXT. And that's going to come to a great point that I'll bring at the end. Next, we had our first squash of the night. And yes, we had multiple squashes, in a way. As Braun Strowman defeats Kevin Owens in a single match where his Money in the Bank contract was on the line. Now, I do understand people not liking the fact that they built up the whole, if Strowman lost in any capacity, he would have lost the contract. But I actually like what they did here. Because, again, Braun Strowman has been so dominant over Kevin Owens when he's motivated, he should take Kevin Owens, as much as I hate to admit it, out like that. Considering the way Kevin Owens' character is, that he's injured and everything, after, you know, sacrificing himself for our sins, being thrown off ladders and cages. So I actually had no problem with it. And again, it made it sort of almost comedic in a way, and it gave people a breather, while at the same time telling a story of Braun Strowman's dominance. Braun Strowman is not here for Kevin Owens' games. Braun Strowman is here to cash in his money in the bank. Braun Strowman was not messing around with Kevin Owens. And so all those reasons are told in this story, and that's why I have no problem with the minute 50. And by the way, Kevin Owens is just so goddamn good as a wrestler that it's not a burial. It's not. Anybody who says is insane. And especially if you've seen the story that they told afterwards, past to Ross, and what's coming hopefully down the road, I'm really enjoying it. Then we had another one of the Match of the Night candidates, as we have for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship triple threat, with Carmella the champion defending against Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. I've loved the storyline going into this. I've loved the storyline going out of this. The match itself was great. They told a great story. Carmella as heel champion trying to get Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair against each other, and being able to work that to some success to try to get her on her own. More importantly, this is Carmella's best wrestling outing I have seen since she came up to the main roster. Or for that matter, I think ever. She's come such a long way, and she's absolutely great at it. A lot of great maneuver. I mean, I think she did a Topa Suicida on Becky, and that was great. Of course, Charlotte with the that twisting moonsault to the floor, amazing. And every time I worry about her when she does that. A lot of great maneuvers, great back and forth of Carmella having the advantage. Taking one out of the ring and then working on the other, and then when the other starts to come in, cutting them off, throwing the other one out, and then working on that person and trying to maintain control of the ring. But then eventually, Becky and Charlotte Flair gain control and them going, beating Carmella down. And that whole build to the finish to where Carmella throws Charlotte out of the ring and she goes for Becky Lynch, and Becky gets her into disarmor. And, of course, she's facing away from where Charlotte, and you knew Charlotte would come. And Charlotte hits Natural Selection for the 1-2-3. It was a great finish. And even greater was the story they told after. Charlotte Flair tying the record for most women's championships. I mean, let's be honest. We all know that she could become a 16-time champion. We know that's coming. And she wouldn't be her daddy's girl if she didn't. But then, and that's not a slap. That's a knockout punch. And you want to talk about a pop blowing the roof off the Barclays Center. My God. Probably one of the biggest pops tonight, if not the biggest pop of the night. And again, this is why the story they are telling here and how they're focusing on neither really a heel or a face. You have two women with two logical points. Works so well. Becky Lynch has scratched and clawed for this opportunity, and to have it be basically taken away because Charlotte Flair was entered into a triple threat match was unfair to her, and she has a legitimate complaint, and she should be champion because she had Carmella dead to rights in the middle of the ring. At the same time, Charlotte Flair can't be blamed for giving an opportunity. She came back from injury because of Carmella's big mouth. Paige made a match that if Charlotte won, she'd be entered into the match, and she won. So it's Carmella's fault that Charlotte was entered into the triple threat. And she had an opportunity to win, she took it. I mean, you can't blame a wrestler for taking the opportunity to win the match. Those stories are great, and they're not portraying one as a heel, one as a face. It's just that Becky has had enough of playing the good girl act. She wants her title, and she is coming for it. And I cannot wait to see the rest of what's going to happen. And all that came because they had this great match that told a great story, both the in-ring match story and then the story afterwards. And, of course, the story leading up to it. Right now, this is the best storyline going in WWE, bar none. I dare somebody to fight me on it, but you won't win. So says the one and only Messiah of Wrestling. Seriously, I dare you to. That match, by the way, went 15 minutes, 15 seconds. Our next match would be for the WWE Championship as AJ Styles, the champion, defended against Samoa Joe. I loved this match. The thing is, this was a slow match, and they really didn't show everything that Styles and Samoa Joe could do together. But again, they're building to it, and I can handle that if they build to it. In the same way Nakamura and Styles built their matches. You know, they held some stuff back so that the subsequent feud could have new things put in later down the line. I loved it. And just Joe. Oh my God. Joe at the beginning, like, oh, Wendy, Daddy's coming home. And the taunting of AJ Styles' wife. And then, again, like I said, they had this great match, and it started to build towards the end. But then, that ending where Joe's taking out Styles, and it's like, don't worry, Wendy. I think he was talking to AJ Styles' daughter. Don't worry, I'll be your new daddy. And that just, like, you could hear the crowd go, oh, no, Joe, you done effed up. And the look on Styles' face was priceless, and just, whoo! That beating he gave Joe afterwards. Magnificent storytelling. Again, match-wise, I thought the match was good and solid. They didn't show us anything so that they'd have more for the later matches. And I actually have no problem with that. I like when they do that because that means they're building a story. And that story, they did a great job of building here. I mean, it shows that, like, if Joe wasn't so busy on being a dick, he probably could have beat Styles. But, you know, Joe's having his fun, so it's great. That match went 22 minutes, 45 seconds, and was the longest match of the night. That was followed by the second longest match of the night at... Oh, hear me, not the longest match. That's the second longest match of the night. It was followed by the longest match of the night. I was looking at the times that I kept looking at as a 22. This match at 23 minutes... The match was 23 seconds long. Daniel Bryan has a habit of these matches. No, this match went 23 minutes and 30 seconds as The Miz faced off against Daniel Bryan in a match 8 years in the building. And my God, this wrestling. This is the match that I think, I don't know, I still haven't decided yet, but maybe better than Rollins and Ziggler. Like, they gave us everything that we wanted in this match. Miz was an absolutely magnificent heel throughout this entire match. Daniel Bryan was a badass, just straight up bungee Miz in the face. Because that's what he said he was going to do, and he just did it over and over again. You could feel the years of frustration coming off Daniel Bryan. Miz doing Daniel Bryan's kicks, and just... I mean, that's the only one thing, is that you have Miz doing the kicks and getting yes, and... Then, of course, Daniel Bryan was, of course, getting yes when he did the kicks. I know it's a New York crowd, but, like, I know you guys are enjoying the match. Can you enjoy it a little bit more by participating the right way, in a way, with the Miz? Like, it's a little bit irritating. Like, I don't believe that it is our responsibility as the audience to sometimes participate in the story by booing, even when we don't want to. Now, in the case of Becky Lynch and Charlotte, again, they're not portraying a heel face dynamic, so I think at that point, there's no problem with not booing Becky Lynch, though if she gets into such a heelless territory that is deserved, we should boo, even if we like her. You know, and that's sort of I know there's this whole debate on whether you should boo the heel going on. But at the same time, I think it's our responsibility as the audience to participate. the wrestlers need our help in telling those stories, and this is a way we can help. That doesn't mean you absolutely hate the guy. It means you participate in the story that they need you to participate, that helps make the pay-per-view and the storytelling that they're telling wonderful to watch and thrilling for people to watch. That is your responsibility as an audience member at a live event or a pay-per-view, at least my perspective. I mean, and that's just a small little nitpick I have. This match is absolutely damn near magnificent. And like I said, just great back and forth, you know, Miz doing everything he can to keep Daniel Bryan down, but Daniel Bryan, just that damn good as a wrestler, just coming back up. And then that ending to where Miz goes outside and you knew Maryse was going to get... I stumbled with my lips there. Maryse was going to get involved somehow in the passing of the brass ducks. Oh my God. And when you saw it happen, it was like, oh my God. And getting the 1-2-3. And of course, you know, Miz, of course, in the SmackDown later, talking about how he had the greatest punch ever. Just magnificent heel work. And just, you know what? As much as I wanted Daniel Bryan to win, there's actually a silver lining. And that means that Daniel Bryan has obviously signed, hopefully, a new contract. And he is staying for a while with WWE. Because I believe his contract was supposed to be up like September 1st. Obviously, he's going beyond that. So, he's still with the WWE. And I think that's a great thing. Because I think, honestly, I know as much as Daniel Bryan wants to do other things in the independent scene, I think he belongs in the WWE. And just the fact that this feud is going to continue, I love it. I hope whatever happens at Hell in a Cell in the mixed tag match, that ultimately leads to one more match at the Super Showdown in Australia. Because Miz and Daniel Bryan completing this feud at Super Showdown would be magnificent. It was a great wrestling match. I thought it was a great ending because of Miz stealing the spotlight from Daniel Bryan as it was his time. And again, I love the fact that they told that story. And you know what? I think it took a lot of balls to tell that story too. So I love the storytelling here. Next, though, we had the shortest match of the, we go from the longest match tonight to the shortest match tonight as we have squash number two, as Finn Balor defeats Baron Corbin. That being said, we need to say what happens. Baron Corbin comes down to the ring, all smarky, talks crap about Finn Balor. All of a sudden, the lights go out. It's darkness with red overlighting. Out comes not Finn Balor. Balor Club is for everyone. Oh, no, 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 no. Out comes the demon Finn Balor, who proceeds to kick Baron Corbin's ass all over the ring for a minute 35 seconds. And with no mercy. Finishing with the coup de grace double foot stomp. I love this for so many reasons. One, we got to see the demon, which is always amazing. And yes, I know people have a problem like, if demon's this good, why doesn't he bring it out all the time? The real reason is so that they don't overuse it, and I'm fine with that. That makes sense, personally. He only brings it out in special occasions, because, though I think he should maybe tell a story of like, I only bring it out because I can't control it all the time, so I have to bring it out in special occasions. I think if they just did that, everybody then would be happy. That being said, again, you got to see Baron Corbin get his comeuppance. And while they did go back to the same storyline of Corbin using his power to get one over on Finn Balor in this past week's Raw, still, I love seeing Baron Corbin get his comeuppance and get his ass whooped by Finn Balor. It was so satisfying. It was a great moment. That led us into the WWE United States Championship match, which between the champion Shinsuke Nakamura, the president of the United States of Nakamura, to which I am a proud citizen of, versus Jeff Hardy. The match only went 11 minutes, but there's so much packed, I thought, in this match. Again, great character work by both Nakamura and Hardy. In particular, in the moment where, you know, Nakamura is silly with Jeff Hardy, and he, of course, does the, come on! And that leads to knees to the stomach and trying to get an advantage on Hardy. But ultimately then, very soon after that, Hardy turns it around on Nakamura and gives him the, come on back, in a very hilarious way. They had a good back-and-forth contest. Obviously, they didn't have a lot of time, but still, they put a lot in there. And then the whole finish to where Jeff Hardy hits the Twist of Fate, Nakamura's set up for the Swanton. But just as Hardy gets there, Nakamura rolls to the apron thinking he's safe. And I love sort of a throwback here to Velveteen Dream and EC3. You think the same thing's going to happen, or at least you hope it's not going to happen, but you think it's going to happen, and oh my god, there goes Jeff Hardy doing the Swanton. And Nakamura rolls out of the way, and oh my god, Jeff Hardy just crashed and burned on the apron. To which Nakamura then rolls him in, hits the Kinshasa, gets the 1-2-3. I love that ending. I love the storytelling that they told. And then I loved Randy Orton coming out afterwards and like, he's not even worth it. He's already crashed and taken himself out. My job's done. All that storytelling, again, you've heard me say that word, storytelling. That's the word of the hour, shall you say, if I can go a little coachman. That storytelling I really enjoyed. I thought they had a decent match. It was a good match, and again, it was very entertaining as far as I'm concerned. Because of all the character work. Then, our next match is for the WWE Raw Women's Championship. It is one of the co-main events, and I think it deserves it, as the champion, Alexa Bliss, defended against Rowdy Ronda Rousey. And this would, by the way, be, as far as I'm concerned, our third squash of the night. And it was such an, even though it was 4 minutes, still considered a squash, and by God, was this entertaining. Like, Ronda Rousey is such a badass, and Alexa Bliss is such a willy-nilly champion, that this is what should happen! This is exactly how it should happen, and they did it! And WWE should be praised for it! The whole point to where Alexa Bliss won't get in, and so Ronda Rousey's like, there! Get the first shot! Close my eyes, take it! She takes it, puts it in a lock, and Ronda Rousey just stands up and says, really, this is the bet you got? Flips her over, gives her arm drags, judo moves, and it has an arm, and just that sadistic side of Ronda Rousey, which makes her such a badass, that she has down so pat, where she has Alexa Bliss's arm, and she is just torturing her with arm bars, and different arm bars over, and of course, double jointedness of Alexa Bliss, allowing you to squirm like, she is going to break her arm. She's going to break her arm. And then that final arm bar that makes Alexa Bliss tap, it's just so brutal. It was magnificent. And of course, your new WWE Raw Women's Champion, Rowdy Ronda Rousey. I thought it was great. I thought it was exactly the way it should have been. It's not a 5-star match. Like, it's, with the exception of Daniel Bryan and Seth, the SmackDown Women's match, which I think was 4 stars, and Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins be like 4.5 stars each. Everything else was really a 3-star match. It was good wrestling. It just wasn't in that, like, oh my god, magnificent wrestling. But again, wrestling wasn't the standpoint here. The storytelling is, as I said, there's a point I'm leading to all this, and I'll get to in a couple minutes, because we have one more match to talk about, and that's the WWE Universal Championship, to which Brock Lesnar champion, with Paul Heyman, defended against Roman Reigns. And let me lead by saying this. Thank God the nightmare is over! I know nobody else may have popped. I freaking popped and jumped out of my seat and thanked the God above that it's finally over. First of all, I love the fact of how the match started, where Braun Strowman immediately comes down and says, I'm going to watch you two. Whoever wins, I'm challenging. And that, as Brock Lesnar is in for just a second, and then the bell rings, and just Superman punch, Superman punch, Superman punch, Superman punch, spear, spear, and he's leaping up for that one, like, oh my god, he's going to squat to Lesnar. He's going to take him out. And then Lesnar catches him in the guillotine, to which Reigns slips out, he gets locked in another one, finally slips out, goes for another spear, and Lesnar throws him out into Strowman, to which Lesnar then takes the opportunity to beat the high holy hell out of Strowman, beat him with a suitcase, throw the suitcase away, and then beat him up with a chair. And slides in, spear out of nowhere, by Roman Reigns, chair goes up, hits Lesnar in the face, Roman Reigns gets the 1-2-3. It was perfect. Like, it, for all the crap we have given this feud, and let's make no bones about it, this is still the worst feud of the year. And like I mentioned again, in the said aforementioned mid-year review over at the WrestleCast and the worst, it's all on Lesnar's fault because Lesnar has not shown any gear. And he didn't. And again, Lesnar didn't do anything special here. Again, he did a couple soup. He did a gold teens. He did a couple suplexes. And then there was the spot where he really beat Strowman with a chair. But again, it was short. It wasn't this long, drawn out squash match where Roman Reigns didn't get any offense. It wasn't a match with a bullshit ending where Roman Reigns goes out first, but because of a botch with the steel cage or whatever by Lesnar, you know, they have to cover up and referee accidentally gives it to Lesnar. Again, it was done the way it should have been done. More importantly, Lesnar got his ass beat. And I think this is the thing. In all honesty, Lesnar got his ass beat because Roman Reigns had most of the offense. Yes, Lesnar got a guillotine and a couple suplexes in to where he's smug about it. But he didn't really get that much offense in. It was mostly came from Roman Reigns, who beat the high holy hell out of him with Superman punches and spears, including the spear that led to him Lesnar getting hit in the face. I enjoyed it. And again, the storytelling here to where Lesnar takes out Strowman, so it makes sense to why he doesn't cash in afterwards, because he's thrown the briefcase away and he can't cash in. I loved it. And I'm so glad that Roman Reigns is finally champion, because if you saw that match that he had Finn Balor the next night on Raw, you know, finally we're going to have great Universal Championship matches. And it's going to be a long road to revive this championship as a great championship, but I think they're starting on the right track with it so far. But yeah, loved it. So, going down the line, we covered all the matches. Let's get into top moments. Starting top three moments. Number three would be Roman Reigns winning the championship, finally. I know a lot of people were booing, but there were a lot of people cheering, and it was a great big pop when he finally won it, because a lot of people, you know, and that's the thing, it's like, yes, people booed after, but let's be honest, when you watch it, everybody popped immediately, because Nightmare was over, and then they booed. So, people were happy Roman Reigns won it for a mid or second, because that meant the Nightmare of Lesnar being champion was over. Still, it was a great moment. Number two has to be... Ooh, so many... number two is Finn Balor coming out as the Demon. And it was a great surprise. Nobody expected it because they really didn't make people prepared for it. So it was a great surprise. And him coming out as a Demon and the ass beating he gave Baron Corbin together. Moment number two. For me, moment number one, though, is Becky Lynch having enough of Charlotte Flair's shit and the beatdown after the match. That pop cannot be denied. And with that, top three matches, we'll start with that same match, because number three for me was the triple threat for the Women's Championship match. Carmella's best outing, Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch were also wonderful. They all told a great story. It was great. Number two, I've gone back and forth between these two matches, but number two, I'm going to give the Seth Rollins versus Dolph Ziggler. Great opening match. Got the crowd hot for the rest of the pay-per-view, and then WWE just really leaned on that through most of the pay-per-view. And then other great matches added to keeping it hot and exciting throughout and the crowd excited throughout the entire show. It was a great way to start it. Number one, though, The Miz versus Daniel Bryan. It was everything I wanted. And as much as I am a Daniel Bryan fan, I want to see Daniel Bryan win it. More importantly, the fact that they're going to continue this great feud. Probably the second best feud going in WWE's main roster right now, with Becky Lynch and Charlotte being the best. Absolutely great. You know, we made the joke that NXT, after halfway through the first match of NXT Brooklyn the night before, that there was nothing SummerSlam or any other event the entire year was going to do. This was the best match. SummerSlam was royally effed. But you know what? SummerSlam did its goddamn best to say, wait a minute now. I mean, you may end up having the better wrestling show, but we're going to have the better sports entertainment show. And I know people hate the word sports entertainment, but hear me out for a second. If there was any great example of the difference, or I should say why, that sports entertainment is not just a corporate buzzword, and that there is a difference between sports entertainment and wrestling, this is it. You know, both are telling stories through the art of wrestling. But wrestling really compiles of that storytelling in the ring through amazing maneuvers that make you pop out of your seat and great action that has you on the edge of your chair. Sports entertainment is about the story, the overall story, and the character work. And that character work and those stories were on point and in the spotlight for SummerSlam. I mean, these matches, by the way, even the squashes for that matter, aren't awful throwaway matches. Like, they all told... So, I mean, yeah, you could skip Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens, and if you really wanted to. You could skip Balor and Corbin, but they added elements to it that made them watchable. Like, a 1:50 match between Strowman and Kevin Owens where Owens gets squashed shouldn't be watched. But to the level that Braun Strowman's beat Owens down with the choke slam on the ramp, the steel ramp, and just completely obliterating him, made it watchable. Balor coming out as the demon and kicking Corbin's ass all over the ring made it watchable. Ronda Rousey's character as a badass, just completely dominating Bliss, made it watchable. By the way, the championship match, the final match, was 6 minutes, 10 seconds. And yet, it was filled with nonstop action, and you got to finally see Lesnar get his ass beat, which was glorious and you wanted to see. So much great character work. That's sports entertainment. It is the difference of story in the ring and story around the ring. It is... Sports entertainment is the all-encompassing story and how it makes you want to watch the match. As opposed to wrestling, which is you liking a wrestler and the story told in the match. They both use wrestling as an art form to tell a story. But I think both can coincide. You know, you don't have to just like wrestling and not like sports entertainment, or just like sports entertainment and not like wrestling. You can like both. And the thing is, WWE gave us an amazing wrestling event on Saturday night and a wonderful sports entertainment event on Sunday night. And this is the strength of WWE. If they can continue to do this, and yes, would I like to see it filled with amazing wrestling, like 5-star wrestling matches along with the story? Absolutely. And they do have those. I'd like to see it more, but you know what? after, you know, feeling like WWE was just lollygagging along for the past couple months, this is the kick in the rear that WWE needed, and I hope they can continue with this energy and this progress that they made with SummerSlam and the week that followed it. I give 2018's SummerSlam a 4.5 out of 5. And that 0.5 is really because the lack of amazing, like, memorable wrestling. I mean, there are some memorable wrestling matches. Daniel Bryan, The Miz, Seth Rollins, Ziggler, even the main event with Roman Reigns and Lesnar because of its historical importance. But most of the matches are just okay, and that's worth the 0.5. But the fact of the matter is, I love this event. I love watching this event again. Like, it has rewatchability. It was just a fun event, and it was a pleasant surprise. Is this better than NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4? Hell no. But you know what? At least this time, WWE's big pay-per-view following an NXT TakeOver didn't just lay down and die. It said, you know what? We know we're not going to try to top you. We're just going to be our very best. And when WWE's main roster just tries to be their very, very best, we get amazing things. So 4.5 out of 5 for WWE's 2018 SummerSlam. Also the 5 out of 5 for NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. That is it for this episode of CMZU's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. Absolutely amazing two events back-to-back, and WWE hopefully will continue this into Hell in a Cell and the Women's Evolution and the Super Showdown. It's got me excited for all three of those events. Of course, they can obviously screw it up, but here is hoping. And right now, the best I can do is hope. So we will see. So, great weekend, great SummerSlam weekend for WWE. Like I said, that is it for this episode of CMZU's Wrestling Reviews. Remember, you can check out the site at www.an.132productions.com. Check us out on YouTube by searching for the Absolution Network. Subscribe and like our videos. Make sure, of course, at the website and on YouTube, you check out the videos of one That Dude in the Straw Hat, Shin Tiger Curl, as well, who, of course, has a new book out called New World, available in hardcover and trade paperback at a bookstore near you. Please check it out. On the next episode of CMZU's Wrestling Reviews, well, ladies and gentlemen, I have something to report to you. I'm all in. But until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember that I am the most glorious Jew that ever lived and the one and only wrestling Messiah. Why? Because I'm CM Jew. Recognize? You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, they bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. I stand on two feet, one beat, right down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a beating. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want.